along the way. But anyway, this talk is based on collaboration with Radu Tatar, who was a postdoc at Berkeley. So this collaboration project started when he was at Berkeley, and it took more than 1 year, so it was really a tough work for me. Especially, my background is phenomenology, and he is, of course, string theorist, so it is also quite difficult to communicate between people in two different parts. But anyway, I'm very happy that in the end I have on paper with him. So let me start with, yes, table of contents. Introduction and underlying gaze symmetry. And since I'm a basically phenomenologist, so even when I want to do a string phenomenology, my motivation is to extract some information that is useful in understanding the physics we observe today. Physics of quarks and leptons, Higgs, inflation, etc. This talk has nothing to do with inflation at all. But anyway. I'll try to kind of determine with some assumptions what is the underlying gaze symmetry. For instance, in heterodic string theory, we have EAT times EAT gaze theory, or SO32 gaze theory. But phenomenological observation does not directly point that there should be EAT gaze symmetry hidden behind. Certainly, it can provide some karamata, blah, 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 so it has very nice feature. But it is not conclusive that we have to have EAT at the place to start. So this is the first question I'd like to ask. What do we really need as an underlying gaze symmetry? And then after determining some gaze symmetry hidden behind, then I'd like to extract some physical aspects. One is uptype Yukawa mass matrix in M-theory vacua. The second one is B-cell symmetry breaking in heterodic string vacua. And at the end, if I have time, then I'd like to mention a little bit about the possibility that the lightest supersymmetry particle could decay before I wrap up. So the introduction, this is a kind of N=1 supersymmetric string landscape. There were two different heterodic theory, type 2A, 2B, F theory, M theory, type 1 theory. And after the remarkable discovery in string duality in mid-1990s, we have this kind of picture for the solution space of string theory. We might call it string landscape, and if you don't like the word of the landscape, then we might call it string moduli space, whichever is fine. And certainly string duality was a remarkable progress and remarkable discovery, but on the other hand, there is a downside. In a sense, there is a downside. In string phenomenology in the 1980s, people have thought that almost heterodic EA times EA theory is going to be the only one possible candidate that accommodate the particle physics we observe. But after observing the string duality, then one of the implications is that, for instance, some vacua in F theory has almost similar property as the property of the heterodic string vacua, and something similar holds true between M theory vacua and heterodic theory, and there is also some kind of T duality or mirror symmetry between 2A and 2B, or M theory and F theory. So we cannot say only from the Lorentzian data whether our vacuum should be described mostly in heterodic string theory or by F theory vacuum or M theory vacuum. We have lost this kind of clue, so we have to have very tough time to work out some phenomenological features out of string theory. And if we have so many different possibilities, maybe our vacuum may be described by heterodic string or 2M theory or F theory, and then that means that we have to learn so many mathematical techniques. In the analysis of M theory, for instance, we need differential geometry, but for the analysis of heterodic theory and F theory, algebraic geometry works very well. So we have to learn both geometry, which is very tough, especially for phenomenology, so it's really tough. But unfortunately, there is one common feature for all these string vacua. I have used quotation for common because there is a caveat there, which I mention later. But anyway, there are two important features there. In most of the cases for realistic vacua, gauge fields in quarks and leptons originate from 16 Suji Young Mies multiplets with a gauge symmetry G. For instance, in heterodic theory, we have E8 times E8 with a 32. Even in the case of 2A or 2B, we have D brains, which has N=4 super Young Mies on it. It is not 10 dimensional gauge theory, but it has 16 supersymmetry. So there is a common feature. And even in M theory, F theory, that's basically the same. And there is a larger gauge symmetry G, which contains unbroken gauge symmetry H. H could be SU3 times SU2 times U1 or SU5 of Georgia Clash or whatever. And the process of the breaking of G to H is done by having a joint expectation value in the joint representation field. For instance, in heterotic theory of type 1 or 2a or 2b, it is done by turning on non-trivial vector bundles. And in the case of type 2a and 2b, we can have some kind of angles between d-brains. It's a kind of a t-dual or turning on the gauge feed background. So basically, what's going on are essentially the same. And you can also describe the same thing in terms of M-theory, F-theory, without d-brains, but with the deformation of AD singularities. But essentially, what's going on is to begin with the 16 Suji Yami theory, vector multiplied with the G, and G is broken down to H with only in adjoint representation, and matter multiplets originate from the coset space of G over H. So this is a common feature for almost all the string theory vacua. Perhaps the only exception is some kind of field theory arising from D3, D7 system, or some M5 brain and heterotic boundary, and this kind of things. Except for that, exceptional cases, basically most of the string configuration for N equal 1 supersymmetry have these features as a common things. So we can use this, and we can analyze it. Then this is a possible way to incorporate some input from string theory, and there we can use that framework to bring in some phenomenological observation and constraint on it, and then we can work on it. Then we don't have to worry much about technical details or mathematical details or differential geometry with Zeta holonomy or algebraic geometry or whatever. So this is the kind of strategy I'd like to pursue for the moment. And especially, I'm interested in determining the underlying gauge symmetry G. We know what is H, but there was a good example of determining the underlying gauge symmetry G. It was not gauge symmetry thing back then, but it was possible to determine the underlying symmetry G. It was an example in early 1960s where pions were identified with the coordinates of the coset space SE2 times SE2 over SE2 isospin. And we have observed isospin symmetry realized linearly. But from the interactions and almost massless nature of the pions, people have figured out that there must be some kind of global SE2 times SE2 symmetry. Back then, people did not know, or people were not really sure whether the quarks exist as the constituent particles for the mesons. But without knowing the details of how the fundamental theory, such as QCD is formulated, and yet people were able to determine the underlying symmetry G, and using that symmetry G, which is realized nonlinearly, then people were able to constrain the interactions of the pions and self-interactions of pions, interactions of pions and nucleons. So for the string theory, we can say the same thing. We do not really know how the string theory is formulated. The formulation could be different depending on where our vacuum is described by heterotic or 2A or 2B or whatever, but we might be able to determine the underlying gauge symmetry G based on particles we have and the interactions we see. So that's the strategy I'd like to take. So let's determine G. Here's some assumptions that I'd like to employ. First of all, we've observed your car couplings of quarks, up-type, down-type quarks, charged leptons, and that are the car couplings. Those are the car couplings. And I want all those Yukawa couplings to be generated from super Yamil's interactions. At least it was true, at least it was the direction pursued by many people in heterotic string theory. One may be able to say that there must be a non-perturbative physics that has not yet been understood very well in string theory, and that is the reason for we have Yukawa couplings. That's an open possibility, but I'd like to confine myself to this possibility so that I can do something. And I'd like to adopt Georgia Glashow SE5-in-5 theory. Obviously, gauge coupling unification is the supporting evidence for it. And finally, I'd like to impose one assumption. One observation we have is that we have down-type Yukawa coupling, but we do not have dimension 4 proton decay operators. If you have this renormalizable operators, then you can decompose this SE5 symmetric terminology into MSSM language. Then we have, D bar, U bar, D bar, which breaks variant number. And we also have L, E bar, L, which breaks lepton number. And there is also probably D bar Q L. Perhaps I'm not wrong. And the last operator also breaks a left number. So by combining these two operators out of the three, then you can break both parent number and left number so that proton can decay to positron. And since this interaction is mediated by renormalizable interactions, the lifetime proton is going to be very, very short, and this is obviously inconsistent with the reality. So this operator should not exist. So it seems that there is a difference between this guy and that guy. That seems to be an obvious conclusion. And so I'd like to pursue a possibility that this guy and that guy comes from a different irreducible component of the coset space G of H. That's an assumption. And I'd like to take these three assumptions, and then I'd like to go on in the framework where we have 16 supersymmetry vector multiplet, and that large case symmetry G is broken by the bound by only by a joint representation, that the strategy I'd like to take. And the reason that I thought that strategy could work well is based on a paper by Lick and Popis Trivedi in 1998. What they did is to think of a model basically essentially from SO11 gauge theory and type 2B or type 1 theory on oil folder compactification. Basically, things can be confined into an oil folder singularity C3 over Z3. So other part of the, if you start from SO32, the remaining 21 probably, D brains have nothing to do with this analysis. So you can only think of G equal SO11 gauge theory. Then what they have is a model where you have three color multiplets of 10 plus 5 bar. So this seems to be an ideal combination of the multiplets and low energy. That's what's fine. But the downside of the model is that because we have n equal 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills interactions on D brains, so actually you cannot avoid these interactions. And you can plug in 11 by 11 matrix of SO11, and you can only truncate all other fields that are projected out by oil folder projection, and then you can retain 3 tens and 5 bars, and you're going to see that these trilinear interactions, forgetting this high dimension derivative, then you have trilinear interactions, which is really a dimension 4 proton decay operators. So it was a rather illuminating example for me that certain choice of G is predictive enough so that dimension 4 proton decay operators are predicted and is falsifiable. So you can turn this argument, then you can select or exclude certain kind of gauge symmetries, then it may be possible to find out what the underlying gauge symmetry is. Now, an important evidence that we already have, is the form of uptype Yukawa couplings in Georgia Glash AC5 unified theories. It could be a downtype Yukawa coupling in flipped AC5, maybe. But anyway, I'd like to stick to the terminology of Georgia Glash AC5. Then, only from the spectrum, we have 10 representations and 5 bar representations. And then we can just have SO10, and the coset, we can just take the coset space of SO10 over SU5. Then we have 10 representation, or second rank anti-symmetric tensor coming out from the off-diagonal blocks of SO10. So that's fine. We have 10 representation. We can also have SU6 underlying gauge symmetry. Then we have a 5 or 5 bar coming out from a coset off-diagonal blocks. So having 10 or 5 bar representations in low-energy FedEx is not very difficult. But the difficulty is to have this uptype Yukawa coupling. In type 2A, 2B, or type 1 theory, in this case, particle physics should come out from deep brains, not from a singularity or this sort of things. And then you can only connect superscripts and subscripts because you can only combine sigma equals 0 end and sigma equals pi end of the open strings. So it is impossible to contract 5 indices of SU5 using totally antisymmetric tensor of SU5. So it seems if you assume that all the Yukawa couplings, including uptype Yukawa couplings, are generated from super Young-Mills interactions, then those theories do not seem to work. Then the direction to go is almost obvious. The underlying gauge symmetry G should be either E6, E7, E8, and then it can be realized of course, in heterotic theory and also in M theory and F theory. You can use E-type ALA space in the computification of M theory or F theory, so that's fine. So we have plenty of possibilities. Now, let's first go on with the minimal choice E6. Then you can decompose the E6 underlying gauge symmetry into SU5 times some remaining SA2, then this is a joint of SA5, a joint of SA2, and the remaining things are 10 representations and one 5R representation, and then Hermitian conjugate. And if you take a look at the integral 4 super Yamese interactions here of E6 gauge theory, then you can extract the interactions among those fields, and indeed you have 10, and 5 representations. So this is an ideal candidate for the 10 representations and Higgs quintet. So the E6 coset space can accommodate 10 representations and Higgs quintet and their uptypic R couplings. So it seems very nice. But it doesn't contain a large enough number of 5 or 5-bar representations. There is only one type of 5-bar and 5s. So it is impossible, if I take the assumption or idea, to keep a distinction between H-bar and 5-bar representations for D-bar and L. And since I want to have distinction between them in order to kill the dimension 4 Poincaré operators, so obviously E6 gauge symmetry is not enough for my purpose. So let's go to the minimal extension, which must be E7. Then you can work out irreducible decomposition of E7 adjoint representations, and this is it. Now, fortunately, in addition to what we had before, which is a 10 representation here, and the Hermitian conjugate of 5-bar representation, which is Higgs quintet, we have also two different candidates of 5 representation and the Hermitian conjugate 5-bar representations. So basically, we can identify the Hermitian conjugates of these guys here and there with either H-bar representations or 5-bar representations. And there are two different possibilities because we only know that there must be this down type of car coupling and Chandler Eppling car coupling. So you can flip between them. So there are two different possibilities. And then one thing that is interesting is that there is an SF5 singlet matter-matrix coming out from the reducible decomposition of E7. And this guy has an interaction like this. So if I choose this identification, then this is Higgs, and this guy is that. And since I identify that with 5 bar, so that interaction is interpreted as this. So if I interpret this singlet, this 5 singlet, as right-hand neutrino, then this is exactly the form of the Dirac neutrino you can't coupling. So this is really good. If I take the other identification, then this interaction looks like this. And this is a part of the interactions of what is called next to minimal supersymmetric theory, supersymmetric standard model. And this may be an explanation why Higgs synomass, which is called mu term, is determined around to be of order the weak scale. But you need to work out what kind of potential this S is going to have, including supersymmetry breaking terms and blah, 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 these sort of things. So either two possibilities seem to be fine, but this possibility seems to be more attractive because there is an explanation for the origin of the neutrino masses, which has been observed in experiment, which is a real-world physic. So I'd like to take the first identification in the rest of the talk. So one thing that we can say here is that the coset space E7 or down to SE5 and SE2 times U1, U1, you have to break this E7 by turning on some kind of SE2 adjoint stuff. And then what you have is that we have enough variety for the particles in low energy effective field theories. And all the Yukawa couplings of up-type Yukawa and down-type Chatelain Yukawa, and at the same time, we have neutrino Dirac Yukawa coupling as a bonus. So this is very nice. So it seems like this is the minimal choice in the direction that I've pursued so far. And let me confirm here that we have kept the original motivation to kill the dimension 4 proton decay. And indeed, this is supposed to be the 5 bar 10, 5 bar dimension 4 proton decay operator. This is 5 bar 10 and 5 bar. And then you can see that, what we can see in low energy physics is just SE5 representations. But by now we can discuss the representation that is hidden behind. And then we have three doublets of SE2, and since what we can insert as an expectation value is SE2 adjoint, not an SE2 doublet of fundamental representations, so there is no way to have a contraction so that this interaction is singlet under SE5 times SE2 times U1 times U1. So that's why you can say that this dimension 4 proton decay operators is not consistent with underlying asymmetry SE2. So there is no motivation has been kept. And as another bonus, you can also see the dimension 5 proton decay operators, which is also in somewhat conflict with experimental data by Super Kamiokande, can be also excluded. You can see, dimension 5 proton decay operators are something like 10, 10, 10, and 5 bar. You can, work it out in terms of MSSM fields, and it is QQQL. It contains QQQL and U bar, D bar, U bar, E bar, I suppose. Anyway, they break baryon numbers and lepton numbers at the same time. So they're also dangerous in conflict with experiment. But you can work out the part of the underlying asymmetries, and at this time, you have four doublets. So for the SE2, you have a possibility to have a contraction among the SE2 indices, possibly inserting the SE2 adjoint representation field. It is basically a gauge field background for describing the vector bundle, for instance. But you can also check the U1 charges of those two U1s, and you can see that U1 charges do not match. So because of the U1 charge, this operator is not allowed either. So basically, underlying asymmetry can break, or can exclude dimension 4 and dimension 5 proton decay operators. Well, I've never seen any example where only requiring dimension 4 also excludes dimension 5. So I think this is a completely new idea and framework that has not been discussed so far, I suppose. What we have seen so far is that G-code E7 is the minimal choice. It satisfies all the requirements, having right matter contents. I haven't cared about multiplicity. But anyway, if you choose the right topology, then it may be possible. It's not easy to do that, but it's easy to say so. And we have all the car couplings, and we do not have unwanted operators, so that seems to be fine. But E8 contains E7, and one message here is that E8 is not absolutely necessary. So what we can do in heterotic string theory is only to start from E8 gauge group, basically, if you take the large radius quantification. But there is other possibility that is not covered by heterotic string theory. That's one message. E8 is not necessary. But it is not necessary, but it is fine at the same time. So you can think of three different possibilities how to break E8 underlying asymmetry down to SU5. You can turn on, for instance, basically E8 can contain SE2 times E7. So you can just add SE2 to break E8 to E7, and then you can turn on an extra SE2 and U1 and U1 that I have done in the previous transparency. So it is obvious that this idea should work. And you can both combine this SE2 and U1 so that you have SE3 vector bundle in terms of heterotic string theory. Or you can combine those two SE2 and one linear combination of U1 so that you have SE4 times U1 structure group for the vector bundle in terms of heterotic string theory. Well, and if you combine all of them to be SE5 vector bundle, then it turns out that the distinction between 5 bar and H bar is lost. So this is not the possibility I'd like to have. But as long as you remain in these three different possibilities starting from E8 gauge symmetry, then the distinction between H bar and 5 bar is maintained. And so you can see the dimension 4 proton decay operators are absent. So that's fine. Now let me go on to a discussion about type of Kalman matrix. Is there a clock or watch? One 30, so 30 minutes have passed. Yeah. Basically, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So let's go on to see a little bit of physics. I'm basically a phenomenologist, so I want to extract some physics. Otherwise, I cannot end. My advisor will be furious, so I have to work out some physics out. And one thing that I'd like to start first is that one of the interesting things is that E7 could work for phenomenology rather than E8. And if you take M-theory of vacuum, then it's rather easy. Well, in some sense, it is easy to describe some kind of underlying E7 gauge symmetry. It is rather easier in heterotic theory. Well, it's quite hard in heterotic string theory to begin with. And it is also easier than in F-theory. So this is one of the...
I didn't quite get it. You just replicate this for each generation?
By choosing the right topology, for instance, in Euler characteristics or of the vector bundle or some intersection number of D-branes or cycles, then the number of generations could vary depending on which vacuum you choose.
But that's beyond... I'm just trying to understand your philosophy here, because it wasn't clear to me how you understand where the breaking comes from. Where the breaking of the gut symmetry group comes from.
You mean the breaking of SU5 down to SU3 times SU2 times SU1? Or E8 down to SU5? It is about the choice of geometry.
Yeah.
So if you choose one, then E8 is broken.
Right.
If you choose another geometry, which does not break E8 to SU5, then we don't have SU5.
Yeah, I understand.
So. I'm just using the phenomenological information to select out the vacuum string theory that suits for the real world, our world, I should say. So there may be other worlds where SU5 is not realized.
These other factors, the other factors that E7 breaks down to, are these unbroken gauge symmetries, or when you had E7 going to SU5 cross SU2 cross U1, are those supposed to be unbroken?
SU2 will be broken.
By the geometry?
Geometry or vector bundle.
Okay.
Or, yes. For instance, if you have some kind of intersecting D-branes, then D-branes will be wrapped around, and that is some kind of description of SU2 bundle in the case of type 2A language or M-theory. That kind of things would appear later, perhaps, once again. This is basics of what has been done, a basic framework of what kind of geometry we should consider in the quantification of M theory with n equal 1 supersymmetry. First of all, you have to start from 11-dimensional supergravity. We do not know UV complexion, but I don't care because it doesn't probably matter for most of the particle physics. And we can start from 11-dimensional supergravity, complexified on G2 holonomy manifold. And one of the what I like is kind of local construction, philosophy of local construction or bottom-up approach. This is a 7-dimensional manifold, which is something like that. It is very big on the screen. But you have a 3-cycle in it, in 7-dimensional manifold. And if the 3-cycle is a locus of A4 singularity, then you have SU5 gauge field localized on it. So the SU5 gauge field, including gluons and photons and W bosons and Z bosons, are propagating only on 3 cycles. And charged particles such as quarks and leptons should also be localized on this 3-cycle. Otherwise, since they are charged, if you do not have any gauge field around there, then that's a problem. So quarks and leptons and gauge fields, basically, essentially what does matter to us, are localized only on 3 cycles. So no matter how the geometry is complicated far away from the 3-cycle inside the 7-dimensional manifold, and it doesn't matter very much to particle physics. It may matter to something, for instance, in supersymmetry breaking or inflation, whatever. But apart from that, if you're interested in Yukawa coupling and quarks and leptons and that sort of things, then it doesn't matter, basically. So you can only think about the local geometry. So then you can think about local non-compact 7-dimensional manifold with G2 holonomy. That makes things very much easier. But I don't like to do mathematics by myself, so experts did it. And people have worked out what kind of matter you can have in what kind of situation, what kind of singularity you have. And basically, if you have, well, you need to have, first of all, at least a fibration over the 3-cycle. This is the local geometry you need to have in order to have n equal 1 supersymmetry realistic vacuum. And in order to have Georgia-Glasser SU5, you need to have SU4 singularity locus. A4 is one of LA geometry. And if you have singularity A4 enhanced into A5 here, then you have 5 or 5 bar representation chiral multiplet localized here. So matter multiplets are localized in enhanced singularity locus. And having deformation of A5 singular locus into this one corresponds to turning on the joint representation field, basically. So this is one of the way how the underlying symmetry A5, which corresponds to SU6, is broken down to SU5 times C1. And you can do the same thing for E8 or E7, broken down to SU5 times a broken SU2 and U1 and that sort of things. And since I've said in the direction that I've been pursuing that the choice of G is E7 or E8, so we can think of only E7 or E8 vibration. Then if you want to work on that direction, then you need to have some kind of better description on how you treat the E7 or E8 types ALE vibration. And you can do it in techniques developed by Kronheimer in 1989, which is to have hyperkähler quotient of quiver gauge theory associated with these extended Dynkin diagrams. You can do the same thing for the A type or D type gauge group or ALE vibration, and that was what Douglas and Moore covered in 1996 with the method of D-brain probes. But anyway, let me go back to E7 case. E8 is almost essentially the same, so it's almost obvious what to do. This is E7 extended Dynkin diagrams. They are simple roots from alpha 1 to alpha 7, and I've added a negative of the highest root of E7. Then it has an intersection number 1 between this two cycle or an inner product of Lie algebra, basically. And integers associated with each node, and these integers satisfy this equality because we have only 7 independent simple roots. So at minus theta has to be in linear, should be written as a linear combination of others, and so you should have one linear equation among them. Alpha I stands for minus theta, and so this is what you have in Lie algebra. And the way to construct ALE space is to incorporate some kind of final post parameter in quiver gauge theory satisfying this equality. In the case of AN type, it is going to be a traceless condition, basically. Traceless condition in Douglas and Moore. And for the geometry that you have out of this hyperkähler quotient method is to have R equals 7 or 8 two cycles CI. And if you add C0, then you have this linear relation among them. And zeta I, final post parameter, describes the size of the two corresponding two cycles. And if you want to have enhanced A4 singularities, then you need to put the 4 final post parameters corresponding to those nodes to be 0. Then 4 cycles shrinks, and that are the simple roots for SU5. And if you wrap M2 brains on it, then you have massless fields. So basically, that's how you get non-abelian SU5 gauge symmetry with n equal 1 vector multiplet in Lorentz effective field theory. So this is how you get SU5 gauge theory in the context of underlying gauge symmetry E7 or E8. And having zeta can be a function of the point on the 3-cycle queue. So by turning on zeta, a non-trivial function zeta as a function of the coordinate of the queue, then this corresponds to having non-trivial deformation of the geometry. And that's how the underlying E7 or E8 is broken down to SU5. There is no reason, a top-down reason, to choose this kind of geometry. But in order to describe our universe, our theory, then perhaps we have to select and we have to concentrate ourselves in this kind of geometry. And then let me go on to matter multiplets. When a singularity is enhanced, then matter multiplets appear. And we can work out, we have worked out which irreducible components we have to identify the Lomorgy particles. This is a slide that I've shown you before. And basically, we have worked out the reducible decompositions and where we have worked out where we should identify 10 representations to there and 5 representations to there. So you can just translate the the algebra representation theory thinks into G2 geometry. So it's rather a straightforward process. And then you can work out which two cycle should collapse in order to have 10 representation of 5 bar weights or whatever. It's a straightforward process. And you can work out which simple roots has to be shrunken, or which two cycles has to be shrunken. And then you can also confirm if this cycle shrinks, then how the singularity A4 is going to be enhanced. You can see this is going to be D5, SL10. SL10 is broken down to SU5 locally around the enhanced singularity point. Then you're going to have 10 representation. And for another point on the three cycle Q, this different two cycle should shrink so that the singularity is enhanced to A5. So A5 is broken, deformed into A4, and we have 5 or 5 bar representations. Depending on the orientation of the three-dimensional geometry, you might have 5 or 5 bar, and you have to choose the right geometry in order to have the right spectrum. But this is what I'm not going to do, because it's really tough things to do. But anyway, at the level of general theory, you can see how things work, and then you can confirm whether the Yukawa couplings that we need are really generated. And in this situation, particles are basically M2 brains, if you're not on the Carlton subalgebra. So basically, you have to wrap M2 brain on two cycles. And so we know which two cycles corresponds to a 10 representation, Higgs and fiber and that sort of things. So you can just put those stuff in there. Then you can see that by combining two cycles or three membranes, then it can vanish. So that means that this trilinear Yukawa coupling is allowed. And indeed, they are generated. And you can see for the up-type Yukawa, down-type and child-leptin Yukawa, and right-hand neutrino Dirac Yukawa. So this is completely fine. And you can also see that dimension 4 proton decay operators and dimension 5 proton decay operators are not allowed, are not generated, by just looking at the sum of the relevant cycles, and then you can see that these cycles are not topologically trivial. So those interactions are not generated. So basically, I've just reproduced what I've explained basically in terms of the algebra's representation theory. But it is translated in M-theory language. And if it is just a translation into a G2 holonomy geometry, which we will never be able to observe an experiment, then that's not so exciting for phenomenologists, so I would like to extract some more information out of it. And then, this is the last slide for the M-theory vacuum. This is what has been known in 2002 by Pennsylvania people. This is a model of MSSM, basically. I don't care about multiplicity, basically, but essence can be seen here. If you have D6 brains, with 3 stuck with D6 and 1 and 2, then you have SC3 times SC2 times U1. Things are a little bit more complicated, but if you simplify it, then this is right description. And depending on the intersection number between this 3 cycle and this 3 cycle, you might have 2 up U-bar quark or 3 U-bar quark. So people work so very hard in order to find out the compactification so that the intersection number is really 3. But anyway, this is a simplification and into two-flavor model. And Higgs is localized here. It is a doublet of SU2. And U-bar is SU3 triplet, but it is only a singlet of SU2. And the quark doublet containing up-type quark and down-type quark is SU3 triplet and SU2 doublet. So this is a model, basically the MSSM, or supersymmetric standard model. And then the Yukawa coupling is given by e to the minus area multiplied divided by alpha prime or something, and so 3-3 entry is going to be e to the minus this area, so suppression is not so very big, and I'd like to normalize it to be unity. Then if you're interested in a 3-2 entry, then it will be e to the minus area like this, so you have a suppression by e to the minus this, and for this 2-3 entry, you have e to the minus that. So you have suppression relative to the 3-3 entry by e to the minus that. And if you have completely parallel D6 brains, then the suppression may be the same, because this length is a common and height is common. But anyway, it is a detail of the overall quantification. This is not generic. So that's why I have put delta and delta prime with different values. And 2-2 entry is going to be this minus area, which is very, very suppressed relative to other entries. So this is how our Pennsylvania paper explained why you should have hierarchies. If you diagonalize it, if delta and delta prime and epsilon are small, then basically you're going to have hierarchy between the third generation uptype Yukawa and the second generation Yukawa. Sure.
How come delta and delta prime are not strictly zero? Because you cannot really close the triangle when you have a drawing over here.
I'm sorry?
You do H up Q2, U3.
Q2, U3?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is what we're calling delta and delta prime. Right?
Yes.
In that diagram, it's actually zero because you actually need an open string instanton whose boundary is the vibrants that are covered over there.
Yes.
So the you don't just get a hierarchy, you just get zero in the orthogonal terms, period.
I guess each minus area will be generated by worldsheet instanton.
Yes, but the worldsheet instanton has to have its boundary on the vibrant configurations. And just take that thing over.
Just a second. Are you okay with having this Yukawa?
Yes, because you have the lines drawn.
Okay. Then this picture is not good. And this picture should be interpreted in the sense that this is a common three cycle. If you have toroidal model, then 3D6 brain is wrapped around in torus.
Okay.
So if you go around the torus, then it should go along this way.
Well, but then the area is going to be a lot more. The orthogonal suppression is going to be a lot bigger if you just take the figure at face value.
Oh, you're right. You're right. My explanation is not right, I suppose.
The area is really going to be.
Okay.
It's
yeah.
A problem because if these numbers are very small, then the CK matrix is going to be wrong.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for comments. You should not take these comments at face values.
Okay.
Right. Right. So they try to have this kind of explanation. Okay. I'm not really sure about the outcome. Basically, I'm not really interested in just having a toroidal orbifold because there is no phenomenological motivation to think of toroidal orbifold. It's certainly easier to calculate, but I'm not really sure whether our vacuum is described as toroidal orbifold, so I'm not really following that, so I'm sorry if my statements are wrong. What you have in SU5 symmetric theories is a little bit different from just having a supersymmetric standard model. That's what I would like to say. What you can see here is that this is the kind of situation you have. First of all, you have A4 singular locus for the SU5 unified symmetry, and you also need to have enhanced singular locus. This is a place where C2 plus C7 cycle collapses. And this is a place where C1 plus C2 plus C7 cycle collapses. And for other places over the queue, those two cycles do not have vanishing volume. So this is a place where 10 representation becomes massless, 10 representation becomes massless. And the SU2 bundle structure is seen here. I have just written two different possibilities for the two cycles for 10 representations. And you can assign 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 if you take a local patch of Q. But if you go around the geometry three-cycle Q, then you have to glue together those things. And you have a degree of freedom to have a transformation using wild group of E7. But the wild group transformation that do not move the SU5 stuff, or otherwise SU5 is broken to subgroups. So you have certain kind of remnant of the wild group. And this plays a role of the vector bundle structure. In this case, in the SU7 model, you have wild group of SU2, S2, so this is S2, basically the bundle group. So what its implication in this geometry is that if you go along this three-cycle queue, then this stuff, which was supposed to be C1 plus C2 plus C7, may be interpreted, if you go back in this side, to be C2 plus C7. Just like these three D6 brains could be interpreted as these three D6 brains. So basically, things are the same. Then the situation here is that since the summation of the three two cycles here and there vanishes, so basically you can wrap M2 brain through this area, and then this trilinear car coupling can be generated. But if you, in this case, if you want to have diagonal entries, third generation, and second generation, well, generation is not the right word here at this moment, but anyway, if you take this localized eigenbasis, then this diagonal entry is not generated directly. Although the area and the volume could be zero, and yet the summation of the two cycles is not topologically trivial. So you have to wrap the M2 brain going around the queue so that this two cycle is now interpreted as this two cycle. So the diagonal entries have to be suppressed, and this is not the situation you had to expect in these kind of things. So the texture of the uptype UCAR matrix seems to be very different from what you can have in just a non-SU5 supersymmetric standard model. That's an interesting observation. And actually, this type of mass matrix is in good... this kind of UCAR matrix can describe the real-world hierarchical structures and mixing patterns of quark sectors. So it was nice. And if you cannot have that kind of UCAR matrix, then it may be not good. I'm not really sure this is a strong enough argument to exclude all kinds of M3 vacua. I'm not trying to say such a strong statement, but at least I think it is an interesting observation. Now let me go on to other topics, but how many time do I have?
It's 5 to 2.
Sorry?
5 minutes.
Okay. Then let's do it. Let me go to heterotic string vacuum and let me discuss B-minus symmetry breaking. The reason that I have to do it in heterotic string vacuum is that, at least for the moment, I haven't worked out how the B-minus symmetry breaking should be described, at least technically, in M3 vacuum. But B-minus symmetry breaking can be described in heterotic string in M3 vacuum. So that's why I choose F3 as a description of this. And B-minus symmetry breaking is important because, first of all, B-minus gauge boson has not been observed in long-range experiments. So if you have B-minus gauge field, then they have to be massive. That's for sure. And secondly, if you want to have right-hand neutrino masses, and in particular Majorana right-hand neutrino masses, in order to have CISO mechanism working for the explanation for the light neutrino mass, then you need to break lepton number symmetry at very high energy scale. And if it is broken at high energy scale, B-minus gauge boson will be massive. And Pennsylvania group, especially Bertolt Root and his company, has been working for years on a possibility that B-minus symmetry is not broken in order to protect dimension 4, in order to kill dimension 4 parabolic operators. But certainly, B-minus symmetry has to be broken anyway in order to be consistent with the reality. And in heterotic string theory, there are three possibilities that I've shown you before.
So it has to be broken? B-minus L?
Somewhere.
You mean by the lepton mass, the neutrino mass.
Yeah, but B-minus L?
If that is broken,
B-minus L is broken. Not. I don't quite understand. One comment is that Dirac neutrino mass does not require lepton number symmetry breaking. So only from neutrino mass, you can't say that B-minus L symmetry has to be broken. But on the other hand, we haven't seen B-minus L gauge boson in weak scale experiments.
Sure.
So at least B-minus gauge symmetry, gauge boson has to be heavier than 700 GeV or so. That is the conservative constraint. So one possibility is to break the B-minus symmetry, gauge symmetry, by Higgs mechanism around the weak scale physics. Mm-hmm. That's one possibility. There are three
possibilities. Could there be an unbroken discrete part of it? Would it be a Z?
That's possible. And if you have Z2 subgroup of B-minus L,
yes,
then dimension 4 parabolic operators are forbidden. So Z2 is fine. But the scenario I'm going to pursue is different from that. That's why I'll come to LFBDK in the end. There are three possibilities, and G has to be E8, and E8 is broken by turning on some kind of SU5 vector bundle, and then we have SU5 unbroken gauge symmetry. 248 dimensional representation of the E8 is I'll decompose into SE5 times SE5 like this, and we have vector bundle moduli and vector mod flats and Charles Madhav contents from here. And I will work on two different possibilities of the choice of the rank 5 vector bundles. If you take SE5 vector bundle, just a generic SE5 vector bundle, then that's a disaster. There is no distinction between H bar and 5 bar, and dimension 4 prime decay operators will be there. So I'd like to maintain at the beginning, for the place to start, I'd like to maintain the reducible structure of the vector bundle. Structure group is SE4 times U1 here, and structure group is SE3 times SE2 times U1 there. And there is another possibility where the structure group is SE2 times SE2 times U1 times U1, but this is actually a special case of this and that, so I'm not going to work on it very much. And let me go first for the first possibility where the vector bundle, rank 5 vector bundle, is a direct sum of line bundle L and rank 4 vector bundle there. And then rank 5 vector bundle is supposed to give us SE5 10 representations. But I have to require, following the particle identification that I've explained before, that the 10 representation Lonergy effective field theory has to originate only from U4 out of V5, not from L. You have to impose this. And for the 5 bar containing D bar and L, it has to come out from U4 tensor L. It is sub bundle of West 2 V5, but 5 bar has to be coming from there, and H bar has to be coming from there. So they have to be coming from different irreducible components of West 2 V5. Then, and H5 is identified with this, then you can work on what kind of car couplings exist. And indeed, you have this, so this is fine. And a part of the vector bundle moduli, which is this, in adjoint V5, is identified with the right-hand neutrino. So the vector bundle moduli is identified with the right-hand neutrinos. So this is an interesting observation in order to work out the properties of right-hand neutrinos. For instance, the vector bundle moduli is mapped into a complex structure moduli in F-theory, and we have certain things about the potential of the complex structure moduli in F-theory, so it could be a possible way to work out some information on the right-hand neutrinos in the future, but I have not worked on it yet. This is another possibility for the choice of the reducible vector bundle, but I'm not going to talk about it. And there we have the original particles, and we have the right Yukawa couplings, and although I have skipped dimension 4 proton decay operators do not exist as desired at the beginning. It was just a straightforward translation of the from language in algebra representation theory into a vector bundle terminology, so it's just translation. But let me go on further. Since the structure group was SE4 times U1, and if you turn on SE4 adjoint gauge feed connection for the description vector bundle and U1, then the U1 gauge feed is not broken by the adjoint representation backgrounds. So U1 gauge feed, which is B minus L actually, is not broken at this level. But actually, it has a Green-Schwarz coupling, which was worked out by Munich people, Blum and Hagen et al. And this is Lagrangian definition of the five-pulse parameter. A five-pulse parameter is given by this, which is a function of Kähler moduli and string dilaton with some topological parameters. And depending on what kind of moduli stabilization that I'm not going to talk about, the five-pulse parameter may not vanish. And if the five-pulse parameter does not vanish, then some of the fields that is charged under the U1 B-Meissner symmetry has to develop expectation values, then the U1 B-Meissner gauge symmetry is spontaneously broken there. And natural order magnitude of the final pulse parameter is by ignoring the next leading order term, one loop term, then the tree level term is going to be roughly 1 over Kautsky scale, 1 over R squared, if you imagine almost isotropic geometry. So basically, the typical energy scale of the B-Meissner gauge boson is a Kautsky scale. And since the mass scale of the B-Meissner gauge boson is an important parameter in thermal leptogenesis, let me skip the details how it is important. But anyway, it is important, so you can extract some information out of this kind of string theory, how high the B-Meissner gauge boson mass is going to be. But there is a constraint. Because I want to maintain the reducible structure of the vector bundle in order to kill the dimension 4 proton decays. So if you have non-zero final pulse parameter, so that Bmassive gauge boson become massive and will be eliminated from long-energy particle spectrum in accordance with what we have seen in long-energy experiments, and yet we may have a price to pay. If we have lost the reducible structure of the vector bundle, then dimension four proton decay operators may be generated once again. So that's a disaster. We are going to lose the original motivation. So we need to make sure that that's not going to happen. And indeed, that is not going to happen, provided the final porous parameter has the right sign. It is one in two possibilities, so it may be right. And in particular, if the final porous parameter is negative, then fields with a positive charge has to develop expectation values, which are anti-generation of the right-hand neutrinos and fine bar and Higgs quintet. And for instance, in a situation where all the particles have almost the same positive mass squared for the supersymmetry breaking, then you can work out the scalar potential, including the D10 potential and the supersymmetry breaking potential. And then you're going to see that only the field with the largest charge is going to absorb all the final pulse parameter, and all other guys remain zero in its expectation values. So it is rather a right vacuum we want, because if you have H and 5 bar having expectation values, it is going to break its 5 symmetry. SC3 or SC2, so that's a disaster. But that's not going to happen if only the SC5 singlet field is going to have expectation values, and it also breaks Bmassive symmetry in accordance with any experiments. Right. But, well, yes. And mathematically, having expectation values in this component is equivalent to the vector bundle that is given by the extension of rank 4 vector bundle by a line bundle. Not in the other way around. If you have expectation value of this, then the place of these guys are flipped. But physics determine which should be the case, and in particular, whether the final pulse parameter should be negative or positive. And indeed, you can see that it's just a charge assignment argument. If you have n bar with non-zero expectation values, then actually you can see that 5 bar, 10, 5 bar, n bar is allowed by the underlying gauge symmetry. And indeed, if you consider certain kind of heavy particles interactions, and then that interaction is indeed generated. And if n bar has expectation values, then the dimension 5 operators effectively become dimension 4 operators, leading to a large amplitude of dimension 4 proton decay. So that's disaster. That's why we have to kill n bar expectation value, and that's why we have to expect that Xi is going to be negative. And under that situation, everything seems to work very fine. Well, one important thing is that right-hand neutrino of its anti-generation is odd under the Bmassive symmetry. So if this guy have expectation values, then the Z2 subgroup of Bmassive is broken. So matter parity or R parity is not left unbroken. So there is an important consequence, which is the LSB decay. This is the last slide. If the expectation value of this is non-zero, then you can work out some kind of super Feynman diagram that have been shown here. You need to have heavy particles, but that may be Kalskalin particles or some other non-harmonic wave functions. So it is rather generic to have vector-like massive states much above the weak scale. And after integrating out those fields to have long-energy effective field theory, which we care about, then we do have dimension 5 operators which break our parity. We can see that odd number of quarks and lepton chiromatophores are there, so this is a clear indication that our parity or matter parity is broken. So LSP is going to decay. And the lifetime is not known because we have no estimate for how large the mass scale is going to be. It's a function moduli, and it's a function moduli stabilization, and we don't have good understanding for it. So we do not know, basically. One constraint is that is cosmology. If we decay too late, then we should have seen the decay product coming out from the sky. So it should not be the case. If it is too early, then actually you can combine two operators of this, and then effectively you have dimension 6 proton decay. So that's not really what we want. So the typical scale should be in between. And then there is a consequence in LSC. LHC, the lightest supersymmetric particle is going to be stable, approximately stable, because this operator is non-renormalizable. So supersymmetric particles such as gluonos and quarks are produced in LHC, and it decays eventually to a lighter particle such as leptons and neutralinos. And neutralinos are, anyway, whatever the lightest supersymmetric particle is, roughly stable. So it goes out into the outer side of the detector, and it suddenly decays. So for the outer side of the detectors, you might see some decay, which is quite fantastic, because, for instance, neutralino can decay to quarks and quarks, three quarks, or sometimes one lepton and two quarks. So out of nowhere, you're going to see two jets and one lepton, which is a fantastic signal for the LHC. And even if this does not happen, and yet if the LHC in the visible sector is going to be the lepton or quark, then it is possible to trap those particles, and you can wait for those particles to decay. So this is a good way to really see in an experiment whether these non-renormalized operators can exist or not. And if they do decay, then perhaps Axen is going to be the dark matter candidate. So
you said you didn't want dimension 6 proton decay?
Dimension 6 proton decay is not excluded if the energy, relevant energy scale is of order of the gut scale.
Right.
So it is fine, but you can combine this dimension 5 operators, two dimension 5 operators, then they effectively become dimension 6 operators. And if the relevant denominator scale is way below the gut scale, then it is effectively dimension 6 proton decay with the gut gauge boson mass at this energy scale. That's disaster. So if it is above the gut scale effectively, then that's fine. Since your car couplings are involved here and there and somewhere in between, so the effective denominator scale could be much, much larger than the expectation value of the moduli field. So this is not seriously inconsistent with the proton decay bound. So this is to wrap up. I'm sorry, this is not a beautiful slide. But anyway, point is that unlike asymmetry is going to be E7 or E8 under some assumption that I've imposed. And one physical information that I can extract was that diagonal entries of up-type Yukawa mass matrix could be suppressed in M-theory vacua. But since we do not have the same geometrical intuition in heterotic string or F-theory, so they're different corners of string moduli space, so this kind of consequence may not be applied. I don't know how to interpret this further at this moment. And then B-minus symmetry is spontaneously broken by, and this spontaneous breaking is triggered by Philipov's parameter, and then Majorana neutrino mass could be possible. And indeed, worksheet instanton contribution do generate certain non-renormalized operators for the right-hand neutrino masses, but there is also some kind of residues theorem discussed by Witten and Beasley and Silverstein and other people in 1990s and in this century, and it seems that argument is applied to that operator. So the situation is not very clear whether, even if the BMSL symmetry is broken, and yet it is not so clear whether the right-hand neutrino mass, Majorana masses are generated or not. And dimension 4 proton decay operators are absent due to the original motivation. And since the expectation value in the right-hand neutrino or its anti-generation breaks B-mass symmetry, even Z2 parity, so the LHC, the lightest supersymmetric particle, have a chance to decay and can be seen in the future experiments. So thank you very much.
I have one question. Did you think at all about the other possibility you mentioned about some of these terms realizing the next minimal supersymmetry?
I'm sorry?
Did you think at all about the other possibility you mentioned that these terms can
for instance,
realize the next minimal supersymmetric model? Or?
There are two different identifications, and the other one is what you're talking about. First of all, well, it is rather easy to work out which sign is appropriate for the final force parameter. It is rather easy things to do. And we did not have any idea for the right-hand neutrino masses because we don't have right-hand neutrinos. That's a downside. And for the up-type Yukawa coupling, the same argument is applied for the M3 vacuum because it is only based on some geometry of E6 coherent space. Extension to E7 has nothing to do with uptype bigger coupling. So the same feature will remain the same in the next minimal type theory. And I don't know any other things I can say.
Any more questions?